Blog Talk Radio.
When I was growing up in Afghanistan, I was raised in a pretty literate household. My mom taught Farsi, and both of my parents could recite poetry, and so they brought us up around a lot of classic Persian literature. So my early influences were people like Rumi and Hafez and Sadi and Omar Khayyam. I began writing when I was a kid in Kabul, probably around 8 or 9 years old. One of the first short stories I wrote made its way into the novel, the Kite Runner, and actually even into the film version. And I wrote mostly because it was just a passion of mine. I loved writing, and I wrote most of my life just as a personal passion. I never thought I would become a writer per se. I was always in the science department in college, and of course I went to medical school. So I'm pretty much a self-taught writer. What I know about writing is what I taught myself. I write usually in the mornings. I get up early in the morning, 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, and I try to write most of the day till about 2 or 3 o'clock. I write without an outline. That's a format that's never worked for me. I always feel boxed in if there's an outline. I really like the element of surprise in writing. So I have a very vague notion of what I'm actually going to be writing. So I just sit down and kind of see where the story takes me. And often many of the things that people have found that I've enjoyed in my books have come as moments of complete surprise to myself. And then I rewrite extensively. I rewrite Kite Runner. I probably wrote 3 or 4 drafts. 1,000 Splendid Suns, I probably wrote more like 5. And it's in those rewrites that I find that my characters really find their voice and I find the depth and the subtext in the story.
That was Khalid Hosseini, author of The Kite Runner and many other novels. I am your host, Richard Weissman, and this is In Our Craft or Sullen Art, a poetry show on Blog Talk Radio, hosted by Late Night Poets, which is the largest poetry group on allpoetry.com, which they tell me is the largest poetry site in the world. And I want to open up by bringing on our co-host, my co-host, Neutron Bomb.
Yo, how are you going?
Good. So this was your show. You suggested this author, Kite Runner author. So I wanted to get your feel about what we're dealing with here.
Well, look, funnily enough, I probably joined Reddit about a year ago, and one of his works, not the Kite Runner, one of the other ones, was quoted on Reddit in one of the forums, 2X Chromosomes. And I thought, look, this is profound, what I read. I wish I had it prepared earlier, but it was along a similar vein of the quote that you selected for the contest. And I think the thing that resonated the most was that if a female had written his books in Afghanistan, potentially they wouldn't have lived to tell the tale. But because it came from a male protagonist, he was able to and afforded much more freedoms than his female counterparts in his writing. I just think as well, we seem to do a lot of Caucasian authors, and it's nice to throw a different culture into the mix every now and then. And the poets really delivered. They really delivered today. Mm-hmm. They're nuanced writes. Some of them are hard-hitting. Some of them are dark, and some of them are incredibly light and spiritual. So I was very impressed with the quality of the rights for today?
Yeah, now that is something that I would say as well, is that we've tried non-Caucasian authors, and it's been a little bit dicey. It's been a little tough, but
yeah,
for whatever reason, they really took hold and jumped with this author, and we had great response. So so it makes me hopeful to try other non-Caucasian authors. Okay, I do have some on hold, so let me bring them on. 715, you're on the air.
Jared, hi, Neutron. It's Pam.
Hi,
I thought
Pam.
It would be fun to hang out with you two.
Awesome.
And you have
this
great poetry tonight. Oh, my goodness. I read through the entries of your contest. Wonderful stuff.
Yeah, we were just talking about that, how we had just a great response, you know. And so I'm interested to see what you think about this idea, Neutron. So Rumi and Cahil Gibran, all these like Middle Eastern writers, poets, it kind of brings us into the great canon of poetry. And maybe that's why we had such a strong response, because it's almost like his work, even though he's writing prose, it kind of harkens back to that great tradition of Middle Eastern Arabic writers.
You know what? To agree with you. And, you know, Khalil Gibran is absolutely one of my favorites. And I actually have to admit, I don't know much about Khaled Hosseini. I've never read the books, just saw the movie, mm-hmm. The Kite Runner. So mm-hmm. I can't speak from, you know, knowing his work, but from knowing Rumi and Khalil Gibran, I can definitely see how, because, you know, they're from similar areas, that Mideast, that there would be, you know, those similarities.
Yeah, and he said in that opening that we had, that intro, that he was very influenced by Rumi, and so that it made me think of that too. So yeah,
beautiful.
And obviously, you know, yeah, it's a huge, you know, that Muslim part of the world is huge geographically, so it spans all the way to, and even past where he is, Afghanistan, all the way into Pakistan, and then goes all the way east to, you know, you could even argue Spain, well, certainly North Africa. So, okay, and so what'd you think of that open where he was talking about his craft and his influences and all that, Neutron?
Well, unfortunately, I did not make it until about 3 to 4 minutes after. So the only thing I heard was you and Neutron chit-chatting. So unfortunately,
oh, okay.
That's
cool. And Neutron, what'd you think of it, Neutron?
Yeah, look, it was really interesting, the part where he sat down to write without any restrictions. Like, everything that I've been taught about writing in longer formats is to structure, to do your character development before you start writing and whatnot. And he has thrown caution to the wind with all of the rules and written some inspiring stuff. And, I think you're both on point about Rumi and Khalil Gibran, I don't know if I said that right, in that there seems to be a romanticism in the language employed by Khaled Hosseini, but it's also hard-hitting. It's hard-hitting stuff. It's almost cryptic, the hard-hitting stuff. And it's not as gritty, the way that he writes, at least from what I've seen, is maybe, say, an American author or myself, for example. but it's still incredibly powerful work. Even more so, I think, because of the subtlety that's involved with it.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that his process was real interesting, too, because I've written longer pieces, novels and theatrical plays, and I don't want to say that I'm tied to the structure, but I definitely know, usually, I know what the end is. And there's definitely creativity, and I never know exactly how things are going to evolve, but I've done a hell of a lot of research before I sit down to actually flesh it out. So it was interesting hearing that really different way of approaching it. Okay.
And then lastly, just one last thing.
Go ahead.
One last thing. His comment regarding rewriting, I thought that was really interesting as well, the fact that he actually rewrote some of those drafts up to 5 times. So it just goes to show the importance of editing.
Yeah, and that's something that I can definitely get behind too. I mean, rewriting is, you know, such a big part of getting strong work, you know, and I think that it's humbling. Like I want to believe that I can get it right first take, but many times in getting feedback from others, I'll see that it's so much better when I take another shot at it. Not as much in poetry, but in prose or in theatrical plays. You know, it's really bring everything to life and give you really good feedback, especially if they're talented in the theatrical plays. And then if you have good readers in a novel, they'll be able to give you lots of insight. So hitting it again after you get some readers giving their feedback is really valuable. Okay, and I see we've got our first poem up. And who'd you like to read it, Neutron?
I might give this one a read because I think it would benefit from a female voice. And so it's called
Great.
The Woman by In Spirit. She,
okay.
The woman, the foreigner, the fighter, the one with the unflattering accent, her religion, her cultural norms, chalk marks that spell different. It's only an observation. Not verbose enough to be interesting, not pretty enough to be exotic. A circus creature repugnant, her footfalls too inconsiderate. It's not a critique, just a comment. The way she tilts her head in greeting or the smile behind her mask is unnerving, fraternizing in a way that blooms distrust. She inquires after your kids and she stays late to relieve you, doesn't complain about covering Christmas again, talks about how her son will be 5 in a couple of days. The last time she held him, he was 4. She must be after pity votes. They swarm her when she bakes, or when they need someone to cover their day off. But she sits alone for lunch in prayer, perhaps. It's ritualistic. Peculiar, just a thought. She's homeless amidst kin. There's loneliness in her grey dimples. Tall and gaunt, cratered, she carries sunbeams on her shoulders. When whispers darken her brow, she molts. She burns, undefeated. Aurora, you are one of the stranger things in life. End poem.
Excellent read there, Neutron. So I do believe that we've got Laurent in the green room. Let me try and bring him on. Hey, is that Laurent?
Yes, it is. Good evening.
Hey. Welcome, Laurent. So,
hey, Laurent.
Hey, Neutron.
And Pam's with us, too.
Hey, Lauren.
Hey, is that Pam? Hello, Pam.
It is.
Yes.
Yeah, so we're having a party. So, Laurent, I'm going to give you first word, it seems like you were there on hold for the whole poem. Did you have a chance to read it?
I did. I was hugely impressed by it. Love the beginning. She, the woman, the foreigner, the fighter, the one with the unflattering accent. As I read it, I began to think, okay, this is a poem about somebody who's a little different. She may wear clothing that is substantially different, but, you know, she's not excitingly different, you know. She's not exotic. She's rather a circus creature, repugnant, you know, something to be observed from a distance, you know, perhaps laughed at, et cetera. But she becomes a human being as we read, and we read about her and the things that she does, and I love the idea of being swarmed by kids when she bakes, or adults perhaps as well, and she becomes a human being in the words of the poem. I love she's homeless and Miss Kin. That whole paragraph right there is delightful. This is a wonderful character study, I think. Beautifully written.
Excellent. Yeah, excellent comments. I think you're right on. Yeah. One of the things that I really liked about this piece is that she changes. So in the beginning, I think that there's a lot of stigmatism about who she is, the unflattering accent, and all that, which is kind of the outsider. And as the poem moves forward, our poet asks us to see beyond surface level, and we get we fall in love with the character, I think, which is quite an accomplishment in a relatively short poem. We identify and we have a warm feeling towards her. And I thought it was a powerful portrait of the protagonist, Aurora. And I liked Aurora in that it could also be a personification of the Northern Lights, which would obviously be undefeated indeed. I thought it was a very strong offering. And the idea of the woman in the context of an Afghan writer writing about Afghan society, I thought was also quite powerful and quite quite challenging for us to look at femininity through that lens and all the things they have to overcome in that culture. So I thought it was very well done, very thought-provoking. And Pam, what'd you think?
Oh, I think this is just an amazing write, powerful imagery and metaphors. It's a great write not only for your contest and the chosen prompt, but also just for a Women's Month. You know, I thought that this spoke on, you know, the strength of a woman adjusting to a strange land. I like how this poem can be taken literally, like it is about a woman, but it could also be about a metaphor. And I read your comment, Richard, and I was like, oh, yeah, Aurora, that would make sense, the personification of the Northern Lights. Because in my mind, there were certain lines that I thought as a personification and the beauty of a place. And, you know, I really like how this speaks on the strength of a woman who has to adjust to a land and who has to adjust because, you know, or not just, but, you know, it really speaks on judgment and how quickly we pass judgment on people for being different until we really take time to get to know them. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, as our reader, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, I thought this was a great poem. I think that you've all done a brilliant job at critiquing it. I think the thing that stood out to me most is that shift that you spoke about. You go from the woman, the foreigner, to her skin, her religion, and then you drill down into the actual person itself. And Pam, I think indeed you're right about this being a powerful right for Women's Month. And it was written to the prompt, "One could not count the moons that shimmer on her roofs or the thousand splendid suns that hid behind her walls." And I just think they did an incredibly good job at highlighting the struggles that it takes when you move from one country to another, but also that shift from an Eastern an Arab country or an Eastern Middle Eastern country to a Western country where there is quite a difference in culture. I was drawn to the last section that Laurent mentioned there as well. "When whispers darken her brows, she molts, she burns undefeated." That's just so powerful that even though she has everything against her in some respects, from the critiques and the comments and the observations and the thoughts that are projected upon her, that she still is undefeated and she still burns bright, irrespective of others' judgment. Very well done.
Great comment. Okay, and with that, I'm putting it back to you for our next poem. Where would you like to go?
All right, let's have a look. Okay, I will get up Eric Svensson's poem Epoch or Epiphany, and I believe there's a SoundCloud.
There is. Let me play that.
Epoch or Epiphany. Between Genesis and Revelation, we knit, crochet, quilt and weave. Spinning wheel, spindle, clever yarns cleave. Spider web synapses, nascent neurons, spirit kindles, visionary flames. Back to front, cranium crucible commands, strident seekers sent out to peak Abu, heart spies hellbent on divulging Canaan secrets, hubris keen on hedonistic delights, Epicurean tastes excite, don't they? Duck and dive, outwit Seraphim's two-edged sword, giddy glad spoonerism's tongue trip, liberals ad lib, coin flippant quips, stage mice in scene interchangeable, promulgate goodness, suggest gratitude grunts, lexicon o lexicon, Rubicon wants to be crossed. Damascus Road experience incurred. Antagonist fear fuels protagonist. Thank God. Finally, flimsy fear factor disintegrates. Back to front. Revelation deals the final deck. Original sin lies debunked. Overlord fear mask ripped off. Spartacus soul gladiators rebel. Breach bastions of fear-induced control systems worldwide. Epoch or epiphany. Intent sets energy in motion. Epiphany or eulogy. With manufactured fear, out of the way. Let's go, comrades. Claim our lion's share of Canaan's sweet meat soul sentience. End poem.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Eric. Great job. Boy, he brings it every 2 weeks for us. And this one was no exception. Highly philosophical poem with mythic tropes alluding to the King James Version, but also transcending Christian iconography. I thought it was, you know, just par for his amazing work, bordering surrealism with one eye steadied towards his poetic goal of light and enlightening. Very well done. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, as always, Eric has brilliant imagery and metaphors. Always can tell he has so much fun with wordplay and alliteration. I like how that, to me, this speaks on the idea of life and the like Genesis representing the beginning of life and the Revelation representing the end of life, and how in between we deal with so much. We deal with our own fears and insecurities, our own masks, and then at last we get through the clumsy part of life to just really start to appreciate and enjoy the gifts that it has to offer. Great lines all the way through and very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was very impressed with this, but I was drawn to this section in particular, and I did a bit of a deep dive into it. So it was lexicon, oh lexicon, Rubicon wants to be crossed, Damascus Road experience incurred, antagonist fear fuels protagonist, thank God, finally flimsy fear factor disintegrates. It was such a dense stanza, which when unpacked I was in awe. Past the point of no return, or the watershed moment, the fear of the villain fuels the protagonist to push through Christian dogma. It's interesting how Eric used thank God in this stanza, which I feel has become an overused vernacular in real life, but nods to the innate spirituality in direct contradiction to ruling over people with an iron fist with dogma and shaming. And as you'd say, Richard, I thought it was great riffing with the prompt and a really clever write. Well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Laurent, we'll give you final word.
Yeah, I was hugely impressed by the piece. I mean, the man writes so beautifully. I wish I had his recall for facts and figures. And wow. I just think it really reflects the prompt very ably. Someone who discovers that fear is not a thing to guide their life, even though that's exactly what happens, as the prompt says, to most people. They're guided by what they fear, not by what they want. And when you can overcome that, you begin to live a much different life.
Mm-hmm. Great comment. Yeah, and a lot of people actually chose to write on prompt 7, so we're going to get a couple of different views of that as well. But we're going to move forward. Where would you like to go now, Neutron?
Pam, would you be able to read Vicky Moore's poem, please?
Yes, absolutely. Our Eyes Speak Love by Vicky Moore. We sit on the porch, my husband and I, as we have for 50 years. Our hands are knotted with age and wrinkles deep as canyons cover our faces. The sky is full of oranges, dark purples, and bright pinks as the sun slowly rises. Birds begin to chirp and the world awakens. When the sun is fully shining, bringing another day to us, we look into each other's eyes, our love shining as bright as the sun. Quietly, we stroll to the kitchen where we cook breakfast together. Through the day, he watches TV while I read my books or crochet, yet another blanket we don't need. After dinner, we head off to bed, cuddling throughout the night, dreaming of our younger days. Another day has passed without a word spoken. Our eyes have said it all. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And that was inspired by the quote, prompt six, something like, I'm not going to try and remember it. I'll just read it to you guys. It's not a word passes between us, not because we have nothing to say, but because I thought that was a wonderful take on that prompt. And I see that Dexter has joined us. Let me bring him on. Hey, Dexter.
Hey, Richard. Hey, Richard.
Hey,
Neutron. Pam and Laurent. Hey, everybody. Phil. Good to hear everybody.
Hey. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah. So glad I could be.
Did you have a chance to hear Pam's read of Vicki Moore's poem?
I did. And, you know, I thought this was a perfect way to interpret that prompt. You know, it's one of those things that hearing it, you could almost feel, or somebody could almost from the outside feel as if this is like a horrible situation. And then but the thing is that this is really true love, is that that this works for them and that they don't need to say anything. And so I just thought that this was a beautiful write and one that really takes us to an inner side of a relationship, because if somebody looked at this very two-dimensional, they could be almost like taken back like it wasn't. So I thought it was fantastic.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too thought a really good riffing off the prompt. Strong conveyance of love, transcending conversation or verbal profession. The poet shows state of being as well as love's timelessness. Very well done. And Neutron, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I think firstly, having Pam read it, Pam, you have such a soothing, comfortable voice. And it really matched the poem. And it was such a gentle musing on everyday enduring love, the simple things, the things that you will eventually miss. And above and beyond that, the vivid use of color and imagery, particularly as the sun slowly rises and the birds begin to chirp as the world awakens, was very well done.
Absolutely. And so we are blessed with a pretty full room here. And so I'm going to take one more comment. So Pam, as reader, I'll give you final word on this one.
All right. Well, I really like this one. It was a great take on the prompt. And I like how it speaks on a long-term relationship where they've become comfortable with their everyday routine and they have a deep love for each other. And, you know, just that everyday stuff and spending time together in a beautiful silence means so much to them. So wonderful write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, Neutron, where would you like to go?
Okay, so we had one carryover from last week by Stellina called Blue Funk. I just thought we should get that up earlier rather than later.
Sure. Okay, so I think that we got a sound clip for that too. Let me play it.
This is a piece inspired by a quote from Arthur Rimbaud. I turn silences and nights into words. What was unutterable, I wrote down. I made the whirling world stand still. End quote. I poured out the poisonous pus dwelling in my soul, painting bleached pristine parchment with stains of venality. atrocities which lingered in deep recesses of my mind, images which played like a film reel of harsh reality. Arching animalism and carnal cupidity that bred within me, for malfeasance of the flesh, so frantic and ferocious, delectable depravity, vilely villainous in voice, dancing upon pages in dripping ink so iniquitous. Macabre musings in a maze of monstrosity that escaped from cages of hypnagogic horror, haunting nightmarish niches of night, diabolical demons stirring profound sorrow. In the heavy haze of sepulchral shadows, my heinous fantasies from my quill freely flowed, with words that wept with blue funk and blood, till dawn, her seeds of daylight, she sowed.
What a wonderful sound cloud. So, you know, it's always fun to have these carryovers because it gives us such a different flavor than the author that we're spotlighting tonight. And it brings us right back into the Rambeau world. And this poem in particular, especially the sound cloud, her line, macabre musings in a maze of monstrosity, just, it to me underlined the whole feel of her sound cloud, bringing this poem of macabre musings to life. And just a wonderful mood poem. And, you know, this is why when they do the poetry slams, you're not allowed to use music because it gives an unfair advantage because it's so powerful what you can do with that music background. And she just knows how to do it. And it's another wonderful piece by her. Very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts on the piece?
Yeah, it's really a mesmerizing write, I thought. Blue funk. I was especially enamored of the third stanza, the arching animalism and carnal cupidity that bred within me from malfeasance of the flesh, so frantic and ferocious, delectable depravity, vilely villainous in voice, dancing upon pages and dripping ink so iniquitous. The power of the pen to write, and the power of the poet to write about that act is beautifully done in this piece.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah, and just really gives us the feel of Rambeau. And your thoughts, Neutron?
Yeah, I enjoyed the dance between the emotion, the poetic device, and the imagery contained within. It was deliciously dark, and having listened to that sound cloud, it was almost had a haunting, eerie quality to it as well. And I think Selena has once again flexed her vocabulary quite well. And my favorite part was delectable depravity, vilely villainous in voice, dancing upon pages in dripping ink, so iniquitous. Such a good post. Thank you, Selena.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Great one. And, okay, let's take one more. Dex, your thoughts?
Yeah, just a stunning sound cloud, as usual. It's just a dark and haunting poem. Great, you know, use of alliteration. It wasn't overdone. And incredible vocabulary. Very well done.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, so let's move back to tonight's work. And I see, Neutron, you've got the next piece up. This is Jenny Hunt's piece. And we do have a SoundCloud, so let me go ahead and hit that. Here it goes.
My dark confession. Fatigued insomniac, feeling like a maniac, deranged, demented demons deep within, coming open, black is the color I'm bleeding. We all have regrets and dark secrets. Not one of us is perfect. Who has the courage to confess their sins out loud to the world for all to hear? Ready for the weight to be lifted. No more fear. Early childhood trauma messed up my brain. Hearts I have stolen amongst many things. I might be a recovering kleptomaniac. A day in jail almost set me straight. Beating myself up mentally and physically called me insane. No doctor has helped me yet. Full of bad advice, I gave up on them. Second opinion, fourth opinion, sixth opinion, I'm done. Stay after stay in a psych ward hospital bay due to self-mutilation and crazy intentions. Marijuana was my best friend, then fried some of my brain with a little bit of whippets and a snort of cocaine. Didn't touch that stuff again. There are worse out there than me, I like to believe. Am I a murderer? No, not quite. I did run over a squirrel once, on accident. Already was forgiven for that crazy incident. Tried ending my life at every chance, but the world has had other plans. Hate me all you want if you must. I no longer care, for the weight carried on my shoulders is now lifted high up into the air. End poem.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Jenny. Great. It's always great to be able to hear the poet recite the work in their own voice. And this was no exception. Tremendous. And I thought it was raw, emotive, confessional poetry. And I love that hopeful arc in the final stanza. Hate me all you want, if you must, I no longer care, for the weight carried on my shoulders is now lifted high up into the air. Nicely done. And Pam, if we can start comments off with you.
Oh, yeah, this is definitely a powerful dark rite. It really pulls at the heartstrings, reminds us not to judge people, especially when it comes to mental illness and because we don't know their life. There's a raw honesty to this and about the way that childhood trauma affects a person. And I do like the confessional style and how it speaks on the idea that none of us are perfect. I like that she added a bit of dark humor. And am I a murderer? No, not quite. I did run over a squirrel once on accident. Already was forgiven for that crazy incident. And there is a sense, you've been through a, you know, difficult and abusive childhood or other relationships. You know, you often judge everything as being your fault, and there's a difficulty in learning to forgive yourself. And I like that Jenny speaks on the idea of learning to forgive yourself, you know, and moving forward, you know. An excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely, Pam. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with what you've all said. So firstly, a confessional piece without the pomp of the little room in the Catholic Church. I know that one well. Honest, raw, and something I can personally relate to, the psych ward, the love of weed, the revolving door of doctors ready to pat themselves on the back for a job well done. And the only thing I can say to Jenny is one thing I can attest to is that most people in this collective society are more concerned about themselves than anyone else. And therefore, I think not so much hate, but ignorance of the suffering of others comes to mind, and they seem to turn a blind eye to it as it seems to be. And I was drawn to this section here. Hate me all you want if you must. I no longer care, for the weight carried on my shoulders is now lifted high up into the air. And there is a hope and resilience in this passage born out of lived experience and forging your way to the future. Jenny, well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Dax, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, I thought that this was an incredible write, and one that's, you know, one that you can applaud for being this open, this honest, this straightforward and hard-hitting. I really enjoy this kind of poetry, and I know it's tough to say I enjoy it, but I enjoy it. I really connect with people that are willing to be open, no matter what their background is, to just be open about it. And I just think that it's so courageous. And so I just appreciated the write so much.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just a great confessional piece. Okay. Neutron.
So Richard, I've got your poem up next when you're ready.
Oh, okay. Great. So this one, is called Patience. It was written to prompt 4, which was, of all the hardships a person had to face, none was more punishing than the simple act of waiting. And so I wrote this poem called Patience. Rushing through a wash of bodies, through stop, then go, now stand still, of rush hour traffic. Forgetting to inhale, exhale, deep blue calm of interior ocean's call, through dilating pupil of mind's eye, slip gray airless lunar craters, stop, listen, answers come in distant Aboriginal drumbeats, peace of the waving palms. Sky-borne breath clearing dead weeds, while green-eyed money hums for glossy dust jackets, awaiting my pitch-perfect signature, old toothache pains revive. Exhale, inhale, mind racing body to catch the 519, red heat pulsing my eardrums, whispering, late, late. While syncopated gallop of my fingernails against the waiting for mica countertop of Edward Hopper's 1940s diner scene keeps me sitting, waiting, thirsting for Java, hungry for ham and easy over eggs. End poem.
Excellent read and write there, Richard. I'm going to comment first, if I can. I think you really captured the prompts well. Personally, as an impatient person, I could feel the blood pulsing through your ears from the stop and start of the traffic to navigating of city life. And the snippets create such a frenetic pace. And I think you, you built on that with the way you read the poem as well. And then you bring us back to stillness. And it reminds me of how important it is to clear one's mind even amidst the chaos. Night Hawks by Hoppet, painted in 1942. It is the eye of the storm, so to speak. I thought it was a great write. And Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like the imagery in this. It has a really raw, gritty feel. I like that you bring us into the idea of the rush hour traffic, where, you know, the anxiety builds up and the mind starts pacing and, you know, you just want to get out of there and you don't want to sit still. And then it does start to speak on the idea of almost like being meditative in the moment. You know, I really like answers, stop, listen, answers come in distant Aboriginal drums, peace of the waving palms, skyborne breath, clearing dead weeds. You know, a wonderful line on the idea of clearing your mind and finding what is offered up in the moment. So excellent write and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
And Dexter, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that this was a fantastic write. It really captured well off of that painting, and a write that's very relatable to me, because there's times where I can catch myself in this moment, and then I realize and take a breath, and you go, there's nothing else that I need to be doing except right now waiting for this breakfast or waiting or just sitting here. You know, that's all you're doing right now. It seems like it could be a lot going on. It could be this. It could be that. But in reality, I'm just sitting here waiting for a breakfast. So very well done in capturing that.
Thanks.
And Laurent, I'll give you final word.
Thank you. The ability to cultivate calm and patience at a time when, and I love how you put this, the mind racing body to catch the 519, red heat pulsing in my eardrums. You're sitting there, you're late, you can't move, it's rush hour traffic. And you have to find that little bit within you, that deep blue calm of interior ocean's call, as you put it. Stop, listen, answers come. I thought the ending was delicious. Well, ham and eggs aren't good, that's true. But the way that was the end goal somehow keeps me sitting, waiting, thirsting for Java, hungry for ham and easy over eggs. A beautiful reflective piece.
Thanks so much, Laurent. Okay, Neutron, where would you like to go next?
Okay, so Dex, if you could read Joe Brazza's poem, please.
Absolutely. This is Joe Braz, Cats. Have nine. Let's talk about mine. Lives spent unliving, waiting in line, only to find one of mine, or one of nine. Not like the days of Bexar, when it didn't make sense. We didn't glare at the beaches, trail parks, airplanes, and woods left there, stripped bare. Two more. Throw money out the window, like strangers' bullet points, or coddled and lived in, when I don't even show mine. Four. Look back. Doctor says I skated through a heart attack, down the drain. Five left. Did I earn cloudless sky like the other guy, or just lying to hide my spying to squeak by? Minus two more. Traffic flies in and out by Highland, La Brea, Fairfax. Jam up with no U-turn, no plans to wiggly dig down without the high or even a sound. Don't lose count. Made to listen, but not to hear someone else's pizza passions poured into my ear, bounces around deep in my brain, trickles down through tied up veins, down to three. Add a line, try a new device. Add a line, try a new device. Verizon comps it if you sign a new pact. Is that the cat's ass? When looking back, doctor says about your myocardial attack. Fade to black, cats. That was fast. Too late. End point.
Nicely done there, Dex. Good read. These near-death experiences naturally cause us to wonder at meaning and purpose, as Joe has here. I think he explores the question of purpose without cliche and with a touch of humor, which is always a good counterweight to heavy philosophical musings. So I thought it a very well executed poem. just real strong. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Cats and lives. I love the metaphor because I have seen cats that should have been killed and weren't and survived to this day. And I think we all survive at some point the problems and issues that we have through life. The AN, which spoke of his being hit by a car and still seeing his chalk outline 2 weeks later when he was coming home from the hospital, where I kind of set a shiver down my spine, the little hints of the things we escaped, and then all the other things that we managed to get through. Someone else's pizza passions poured into my ear, bounces around deep in my brain, trickles down through tight-up veins, down to streets, way he eliminates the lives throughout the poem, and finally end up with that stunning ending. Cats, that was fast, too late. Wonderful.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this is a really introspective write, and Joe was hoping that it would stand to cliche, and I have to agree that it was. The extended metaphor reminded me of the confessional poet Sylvia Plath with reference to nine lives, like the cat in Lady Lazarus. But unlike the aforementioned poet, these were not at the hands of suicide, but rather the near death experiences expressed in the author note. It's philosophical and also hints at that nostalgic humour while drawing the reader and listener back to reality with the counting down of the clock with the cat's lives slowly declining. Very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Great comment. And we'll take one more. Pam, why don't you give us a final thought on this?
Yeah,
that's
definitely absolutely, absolutely wonderful. I like that he brings in the extended metaphor of the cat. And it's a rite that is philosophical, takes a great look at near-death experience and how it makes us question our purpose in life. And was done with nice little dashes of humor throughout. So excellent writing, very well done.
Great comment. Okay, and I see you have our next poem up, Neutron.
Yeah, so Laurent, your poem's up when you're ready.
All right, thank you. Let me just refresh. All right. This is called Refusing Gravity. It was written to the prompt, better to get hurt by the truth than comforted with a lie. There exists a delicacy in the tear, recalcitrant in surrendering its drop, refusing to fall, clinging to its home, as if afraid to fly, full stop. For fly it will, to the center of sorrows, refusing gravity, pair to the trembling eye, which sees the end of all things, a banishment of eternal tomorrows. A brush of the hand banishes one, only to be replaced by another, birth and death accomplished together, as if the moon had swallowed the sun. What grief is contained in the eye of a rapturous soul is banished and dashed in the tear that appears as the gauge of our mortal toll. Fallacies fly. In the absence of sooth, there is no comfort in comfortable deceit. It is forced to advise, if advice is a prize, too costly to be considered as truth. End poem.
Great read and write there, Laurent. And if we could start with Dexter, what'd you think?
I thought that this was an incredible write, all the way from the title. Sometimes titling a piece is a huge amount of the difficulty, but for the quote to be better to be hurt by the truth and comforted by a lie, and calling it Refusing Gravity. There's a lot to unpack here. What grief is contained in the eye and rapturous soul? is banished and dashed in the tear. What appears as the gauge of our mortal toll. There's just a lot of really questioning our own mortality within this, and it is no comfort when it's all said and done at the end of the day, if you lived a lie, than to rather check out whatever might be next, living the truth. So very well done, Laurent.
Thank you, Dex.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a wonderful, right? Powerful imagery and metaphors. I like how it speaks on the idea of trying to hold back that grief, trying to hold back that sorrow, and not revealing it to people, but realizing that it will be let go, that you cannot banish and dash those tears away. Wonderful use of some alliteration in here. Fallacies fly in the absence of sooth. There is no comfort in comfortable deceit. That is for survive, it's advised as a prize, too costly to be considered as truth. I like the inner and end rhyme and the idea that if we try to hide those things that we shouldn't, eventually, you know, it's going to cost us more than it originally would have. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Great comment there, Pam. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was drawn to this section here. A brush of the hand banishes one, only to be replaced by another. Birth and death accomplished together as if the moon had swallowed the sun. It was an emotional war, right? And in my opinion, a gut punch. The tears and the grief is palpable. This hit hard. Grief for me comes in waves, and crying helps sometimes. The only problem is it will never replace what is lost. A great answer to the prompt, accessible and brilliant. And the only reason I'm mentioning this next point is because you put it in there despite the auto rank score. So it just goes to show that you can't always be a slave to auto rank. Very well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, Neutron, I was about to say the same thing. Just shows you how useless auto rank is. Because auto rank is this, what was it, a total one, professional similarity two, and this is just such a brilliant write. Not only did it remind me of the prompt and just a brilliant take and riffing off of the prompt, it also reminded me of Shakespeare's Hamlet, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, and how we're, you know, at great personal pains and detriment, we suffer these slings and arrows, and you show it to us so well, so skillfully, and show us how grief, how pathos is endured, and you explore it so well, and it's just such a powerful poem. It's almost humorous that it's given whatever auto rank was given. I get it, though. It's funny because auto rank has no idea of the context in which words are used. It's just seeing the word cry or tear or whatever and marking appropriately based upon some, you know, some wooden assessment of what that word is, good or bad. So it's very funny, I thought. And brilliant work as always, Laurent. Great
Thank
job.
You, Rich.
Okay, Neutron, where would you like to go?
All right, so I've got Weaver of Dreams up next, and I believe there's a SoundCloud.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me just not get ahead of myself. Hold on one second. The reason why I say that is because there's sometimes more than one of these things, but I see a silent accord. Okay. Yep, got it.
Our morning ritual unfolded. redolent with the rich aroma of coffee, toast, and misguided complacency, while we moved around with the ease of experience in silent accord. John left to go to work and I to my studio, awash with sunlight and hope. Suddenly I became aware we said only two words to each other, as if by rote, bye and bye. Being comfortable together was fine, but this was more like a stalemate. Finishing each other's sentences, cute, but not if nothing new was said. Where was that passion that meant we had to touch some part of each other at all times, and we spoke for hours about our future, drank wine, and laughed? I had to do something, light a spark, before it was too late for change. On a large piece of paper, I wrote one word, bedroom.
Great, SoundCloud Weaver. Laurent, if we could start with you, what'd you think?
There's a wry humor in this that I find quite delightful. And that stanza where she says being comfortable together was fine, but this is more like a stalemate. Finishing each other's sentences cute, but not if nothing new was said. You know, it's one thing to be so comfortable with another person that nothing need be said. It's quite another thing when that silence is almost forced because there's nothing left to say. But things can be solved with that one word, bedroom. That was nice.
Absolutely. Yeah, great comment. I was thinking the same thing, how words can get old. And, you know, after however many years of a relationship, you've said everything you can say. And Weaver has the genius to write down on the piece of paper one word, bedroom, because touch, especially loving touch and intimate touch, can just change things. I mean, I'm certainly not a physician or a biologist, but I know enough about it as a layperson to know that the endorphins start going and it just shifts things. And sometimes that makes everything new again. And I loved how she turns the prompt on its head for her purpose. And then turn it again at the end with that magic word, bedroom. Nicely done. And Dex, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that this was, very well done. And I thought it was kind of cute almost in a way because it's like, I felt like as if almost, I know you took it as somebody, you know, from a long time. I thought that this was somebody almost that has been on so many dates with the person. They really like this person, but neither one of them are, you know, basically both almost respecting each other to the point where neither of us are going to go this far. But the conversation is drawing dry because it's on, what else can you think about maybe, because it's on both of our minds. And so I thought that she just captured that so well on here. It was just a perfect moment. So very well done.
Nice take there, Dex. I like that you offer that alternative interpretation, which now that I see it the way you're suggesting, it seems just as valid. So great, great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like how Weaver captures a moment or a series of moments. And for me, I was kind of drawn to the complacency that sometimes comes with long-term relationships. And I think I remember when in my youth, I say that at the age of 39, but they do not call it the seven-year itch for nothing. But the thing I like the most about this poem is that Weaver goes from being a casual observer to the protagonist of the story that is willed into action with the word bedroom. And I like also that she left it open-ended, as in life, not everything can be tied up with a neat little bow. Raw and honest and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay. Where would you like to go next?
Okay. So I have a poem by Spectrum DN, and might get Laurent to read this one.
Okay. I can do that. Where is it? Okay. Wind is the kite runner's feet. Amir, take a sharp left turn, the only turn at the shadowy end of that lampless road. I'll meet you there. I mean there, by the retaining wall. Bring your inner child. We have to talk. Let's knit a new afghan to comfort our bones with the warp of truth and weft of lies, and the boldest kite pattern in between to flutter way above the laugh lines of a sky, like the crow's feet on the face of an orphan child, crouching behind a crumbling mud hut. I, too, saw it all at the age of 12. From the Kaaba to Aqaba, to Ararat's Golgotha, the first kite runner's name was Noah. From Kabul to Bethlehem, to the gates of Jerusalem, alight donkeys with dangled legs, muleteers and musketeers, in Matricoya, Matryoshka's nesting tanks, Taliban break bread with cut-off hands. On top Kapi's cannon hills, Muzin's loud salats, scimitars and scabbards curved with blood. Oft-heard prayers of God is great, God is great, but not when you blow up a fellow man's head. Sultan's men kill a race of real mothers and kids, then kiss their sons' photos on both cheeks. The weighty love sins of your forefathers eat of a past, like palimpsests plastered on your heads. Don't fret, Baba. Rest in peace. Rest in peace. Can't cut another's kite strings without the wind. End poem.
Nicely read there, Laurent. So, boy, Spectrum DN's poetry never disappoints. This one was just breathtaking. I'm not sure male or female, but the poet accomplishes so much in this relatively short poem. It has an authentic Middle Eastern feel that alludes to the canon, to their canon. So King James version of the Bible, the Quran, as well as contemporary voices of the region, which just the authenticity there, it's painful. You know, the cutting off of the hands and God is great. The whole thing is just, you know, it's like a horror. And it just feels so real to me. And I felt it, and it was a tough one to read in a good way. And just very well done. And Dex, your thoughts?
Yeah, this one, and, you know, like you said, it was so hard to read in the authenticity. I think that what added to the authenticity is that, unfortunately, you know, the region has been so, there's been so much bloodshed, and there's been such an endless amount of war that almost hand in hand that, you know, it can only be had is a deeper knowledge, or almost just a deeper understanding of how to deal with the grief. And it just, it felt like a deeper wisdom almost reading this poem, of even though it was just talking about such a difficult context. That's why I think the authenticity comes in, because here in America, that, you know, just this war and all of this death and things like this is such a difficult context. In other places where it seems like it has to be so much more common, that there's poets and people had come to an understanding of it. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
I was so impressed with this poem. It had a strong social conscience throughout. And just as an aside, it's a shame that religious dogma, not religion or spirituality, but the dogma infects the planet in all corners. And one cannot just wash it from their skin or a kiss bring back fallen suns. The first vignette was playful and almost whimsical, and the romanticism of the language was palpable in my eyes. The second vignette, though, brought it back from a fable to reality, crashing, burning reality. I was a bit emotional listening to Laurent read it, especially when it got to "Don't fret, Bubba, rest in peace, can't cut another kite's strings without the wind." It was an inspiring write. Well done.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Laurent, as reader, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, just to prove I can say matryoshka, I rarely get bound up on words so badly that I can't escape it. But I did then. What you said about realism, a poem being real, I agree with wholeheartedly. There's all authenticity drips from virtually every line in this piece. I'm especially fascinated by the phrase kite runner, and the title "Wind is the Kite Runner's Feet." It seemed very ambiguous to me for a long time until I read the poem and realized that how important the wind is to anyone who's flying a kite. It's really a metaphor for life. I mean, you can't breathe without oxygen. You can't love without someone to love. And you can't cut another kite strings without the wind. There's some depth to this. Really remarkable piece.
Absolutely, yeah. Great end line, right? Okay, where would you like to go next, Neutron?
I'm going to put mine on the board, and it's called Protect Your Peace. So just a backstory, I actually chose a different quote. He walked like he was afraid to leave behind footprints. He moved as if not to stir the air around him. And I also watched Accessory to Evil, Monique Olivier, recently, so this is what came of it. I could tell tales of babbling brooks, but this is not an affirmation of affectation. Language languishes on the page, painting word pictures in pearl grey. I impose pussycat perched on his shoulder, transcribing through poet eyes the bracken that has dislodged underfoot in a shallow grave. Youth flagrantly fallen foul to a man whom hides in Bible verses bleeding black from his beady irises. His crooked canines sink into nubile purloined tissue. The air is crisp, thieving the breath from her lungs, which quiver like a hummingbird and constrict and seize as life leaves her body in increments. Stillness is punctured by her breath. The plumes of water vapor disperse as insects and scurrying field mice are felled by the Eurasian eagle owl. The owl consumes its prey rather than toying with it to coax control in an otherwise existential existence. A white van punctures the countryside with abject terror, belittling the motionlessness of the night. Hope is a death call for siblings stuck in a cycle of survivor guilt. Unraveled pith of orange peel decomposes amongst the overgrown landscape. She was an eggshell, cracked open by callous hands. He ravaged the boiled egg, gnashing callously, gorging on the soft yolk. Diffused light trickles through the canopy. The remnants of a mustard backpack lay strewn out by a fox fossicking for food on the forest floor. End of poem.
Whew. Wow. Wonderful there. Just a wonderful read. And you really brought it to life in your recitation. So thanks so much for that. To me, this had a strong Gothic feel in addition to being your kind of trademark confessional poetry. I especially like that metaphor in the penultimate stanza. She was an eggshell cracked open by callous hands. He ravaged the boiled egg, gnashing callously, gorging on the soft yolk. Oof, boy, it's rough. It made me feel it. And not pleasant, but it's an important poem in terms of being able to take us into that uncomfortable space and make us sit with the discomfort and identify with the protagonist. So very well done. Nicely done.
Thank you.
And yeah. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is just brilliant. Love the imagery, the extremely dark feel, beautifully written vignette. I like how, to me, it speaks on the idea of life and death and give and take. And it has that certain kind of dark sensuality to it. I really like this all the way through, but that second part really captured my attention. I am Poe's pussycat perched on shoulder, transcribing through poet eye the bracken that has dislodged underfoot in a shallow grave. Wonderful lines all the way through and very well done. Thanks,
absolutely.
Pam.
Yep. Thank you, Pam. Great comment. And Dex, your thoughts?
Yeah, the use of metaphor throughout this one was just incredible. As somebody had pointed out, the imagery was almost, unnerving and just unsettling. And the way that you were able to carry that, you were talking as if animals, but everybody kind of, you did such a great job of using it that one could only bring this back to obviously what it was. And so I just thought that this was an incredible right, Lutron. Loved it.
Thanks, Dex.
Great comment, Dex. And Laurent will round comments out with you.
Yeah, I've read this twice now, and I don't know how wrong I am, but it strikes me that this is a poem about someone who kidnaps people, perhaps children, and kills them. And I...
Yeah.
All right, thank you. I was hoping I wasn't completely crazy. Then the second Pam referred to works for me so well. Youth flagrantly fallen foul to a man who hides in Bible verses, bleeding black from his beady irises, his crooked canines sink into nubile purloined tissue. You know, how lucky was Poe's pussycat perched on his shoulder? a part of what was going on as he wrote, and boy, I'm not saying this could have been written by Poe, I'm not sure it's his style, but Lord, the way you write it, the skill and the imagery is so strong, so powerful. It could have been written by him. Just great.
Thanks, Laurent.
Absolutely. Great comments. Great comments all around. Okay, Neutron, I think you have the next one up too, right?
Yeah, so I've got Mamuel's poem. I'm just going to double check that. There's no SoundCloud. Pam, would you be able to give this a read, please?
I would be happy to. This is In Silence by Mamuel. I lay beside you on the sand, my hand clasped in yours. We sun was setting, the sky a mural of pink and purple hues. You turned to me and I to you, silent but for our heartbeats. With a glance and a touch, a thousand words passed between us. The song of the sea, a counterpoint to our heart's harmony. As lips touch lips, we burn together in the fires of passion, tattooing our names on each other's soul with each caress. Sinking into the depths, together we rise as the dawn breaks. One more kiss, one more embrace before the embers die. End poem.
Nicely read there, Pam. And Dex, if we could open comments with you, what'd you think?
Yeah, her brevities are always so powerful. Even from the title, In Silence, and also in lowercase, you know, it something about it just adds to the whole formula, or just to the whole flavor of it. You turn to me and I to you, silent in our heartbeats. There's a deep, deep connection. The song of the sea, a counterpoint to our heart's harmony. It's almost as if it's universal, and almost as if it's like gravitational, whether it be the moon or the tide or the waves that are happening. There's a certain connection here, and a longing, and you know, and the way that she says before the embers die. That there's a, to me, there's a romantic side to that. You know, it's to death do us part. So very well done.
Absolutely, great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, I think of those final lines, the poet is acknowledging the fact that as fires die, so do relationships. And there's just enough time for that one more kiss, one more embrace before the embers die, which is, it's kind of sad to think about it. Too many relationships are based only on one thing and not on the multiplicity of emotional contacts that normal lives are graced with. But sinking into the depths, together we rise. Dawn breaks, one more kiss, one more embrace before the embers die. There's such a note of finality in that. It's very touching.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too thought this was a wonderful take on that same prompt, and it's interesting to get these different takes on the same prompt. And Manuel shows not only wordless understanding, but the unspoken passion that, though temporal, continues to burn brightly. Very, very well-crafted, clever execution. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I have to say that Memuel seduces the reader with nuanced passion. And it's almost a departure from the dark material I'm used to seeing from Memuel from other shows. However, I will say it's both intense and engaging. It burns bright with the fire on the beach, but as with most raging fires, it is reduced to embers with the dying of the flames. And I really love how she used vivid color to reinforce the imagery within. Well done.
Mm-hmm. Great comment. And Pam, I'll give you final word as reader.
This is a wonderful brevity. I love how each stanza and line flows beautifully into the next. It has such a tender and romantic feel of two lovers being able to communicate without words being used. Wonderful, right, and very well done.
Great comment. Okay, we are ready for our next one.
Okay, so we have a poem by S Shop, and there should be a SoundCloud.
Yep, I got it. Let's see. Yep, here it is.
How life shapes up. It's funny how triangles ignore the glint in a circle's eyes. Shades of melancholy. A pupil dilated by the friction against the blue depression embedded in your irises. The way the sun scrapes unbearably against the blue sky makes birds do things I've never seen them do before. Swoon like a rhombus. Have you ever dug up the morning glories? Laying lifeless on the hard ground like a tilde. There seems so little glory in that, but mix oil with water and watch them argue. The whole neighborhood listens. They pretend to pull the shades down or turn out the lights until the silence takes the shape of a heart. They say in space hope floats about, nowhere to go with a lack of gravity. But still, somehow the skin of my face sags. The tips of triangles sag also, making rectangles, or worse yet, squares of so many people's dreams. Which is why I save my dreams by the far end of the perfect circle.
Great right there, Scott. And that SoundCloud really brought it to life. Thanks so much for that. So this poem, I read this one, I think, twice or three times, and I had to walk away from it, come back, read it again, and I got it. So it was a highly cerebral poem of philosophical musing. And I love the use of various shapes, triangles, rectangles, circles, to show how we fit into the universe as opposed to how we imagine that we'd fit. And that, so this was written off of prompt 8, which is, they say, find a purpose in your life and live it. But sometimes it's only after you've lived that you recognize your life had a purpose, likely one you never had in mind. So I thought it was an excellent take on that prompt. Very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts on this one? Are you on mute?
Lawrence had to drop.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Thanks, Pam. All right, so since you brought that to my attention, your thoughts on it, Pam?
You're just like Rex when I co-host with him. Every time I speak up, that's my punishment for doing a good deed. No, I'm But, no, I thought this, and this one was one that took multiple reads, and even after a couple of reads, I wasn't sure I completely understood it, but I truly appreciate it. I like how he brings in the use of different shapes. You know, one of the main themes I got from it was the way that life takes unexpected twists and turns, and how sometimes we have to store away our dreams. And I like this all the way through, but the mention of the word, he brings in the morning glories. Have you ever dug up the morning glories, laying lifeless on the hard ground like a tilled? There seems a little glory in that, but mix oil with water and watch them argue. The whole neighborhood listens. I like how that speaks on the idea of, you know, stirring things up in the neighborhood, making sure that people have something to talk about. Wonderful lines throughout, really thought-provoking, and of course, as always, his SoundCloud is just wonderful to listen to. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Pam. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I I'm going to keep it short because we've got quite a few to go through. It's not easy to use geometry and the universe and provide both a philosophical and emotional poetic offering. And it was a great answer to the prompt you mentioned there before. I was drawn to this section here. The tips of triangles sag also, making rectangles or worse yet squares of so many people's dreams, which is why I save my dreams for the far end of the perfect circle. It is melancholic for the masses, but Scott's dreams are circular and therefore protected by the far end of that perfect circle. Well done.
Absolutely. Okay, so since we are running late, let's move on. Where would you like to go next, Neutron?
Okay, so I'm just putting Arcana's collaboration with Selena up, Nostradamus.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay, we do have an audio for that, and I am pulling it now.
What horrors await in the flickering flame, to see past its glow where visions proclaim, through a halo of light by midnight chime, beyond the present, gazing forwards in time. When dying day is embalmed in shrouds of night, incredible illusions sprout wings to take flight. My wearisome wits hover the edge of reality, diffidently doubting all reason and sanity. Each trance reveals disaster, pain and despair. Such burdens of tragedy bring hardships to bear. To speak of such things that foretell of doom, as I sit focused forlorn in a candlelit room. Foreshadows of future in time will unfold, weeping, wailing sorrows of sufferance untold. Dire depictions of dictators who will burn our world, through corridors of my miserable mind swirled. Carriages fly skies to rain down infernos, ashes are scattered where'er the wind blows. Mighty machines wield their blazing torches, cremating vast armies in fields of corpses. Hence I see the end of mankind's existence, yet no one listens despite my persistence. Some call me insane, evil, possessed of the devil. In vivid visions of disaster, my prophecies revel. Ne'er do they predict of triumph nor beauty, as death and destruction perform their duty. These things I behold through tearful eyes, drowned in the screams of deathly cries. In shifting sands of time, they'll come to pass, as each grain cascades in an eternal hourglass. These nightmarish notions that invade my head, sire pernicious portents of doom and dread. It wounds my soul to peer into this hell, knowing full well these sights I must tell. Man masters bloodshed to such a degree, rivers of blood flow freely where'er I see. I have become a prophet and faithful seer, filling heavy hearts with floods of fear. How will they speak of me in years to come? That I foresaw endings before they'd begun. Ego mein proceris eini, homo est victima proprie cupiditatis, si modo bellum tandem cessare, homo venie viam ad pacem.
Thank you for the SoundCloud. Wonderful piece. This was actually a collaboration between Arcana Amor and our friend Stelina. So what a wonderful production, the audio. And it hit me just... I always loved Nostradamus, such a fascinating character. And I felt that the authors captured both his gift and his struggle in their collaboration. I especially liked carriages fly skies to rain down infernos. Ashes are scattered where'er the wind blows. Mighty machines wield their blazing torches, cremating vast armies in fields of corpses. This stanza in particular, I felt, highlighted the striving of a pre-modern mind like Nostradamus to describe modern warfare. The whole poem felt authentic to me, and the audio gave even more color and depth. Just a wonderful production. And Dexter, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that what you said was fantastic, and I just kind of want to piggyback almost on the, you know, on the authenticity, just the wording, the almost finality, you know, just the deep down belief, you know, that was almost carried with it in the SoundCloud and with the words. And so I thought that it echoed very well on Nostradamus. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was a really dark offering for the chosen prompts, which was prompt 7 and 8. And just an aside note, I agree with both of your comments there. Nostradamus lived with purpose. And in a time where his gift could have been perceived as courting with controversy with the Catholic Church. However, his quatrain style and content was so cryptic that it was never condemned. And I think his fame was both a blessing and a curse, as well as his talents. And it really melds with the prompt extract, but really what guides them is what they're afraid of, what they don't want. Was very well done collaboration.
Absolutely, great comment. And Pam, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, this is a wonderful collaboration. It was really brilliant and beautiful with the imagery. An excellent writer of mine that sees what others don't and was judged mad for that differences. And I thought it was just great writing between the two of them, and I have to agree, wonderful authenticity in bringing in the mind and the struggles and the gift of Nostradamus. So excellent write all the way through and very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. Okay, Neutron, I see we have another poem up.
Yeah, would you? I feel like you haven't read for a while, Richard, so I'll get you to read this one.
Okay, yes, always a little challenging to read Eric's work, but I will certainly give it a go. All right, so this is Eric Daniel Herman, These mountains echo the last Kalahari Bushman song. These mountains echo the last Kalahari Bushman song, a shaman story on the birth of art and consciousness. Rhythmically, I moved, stomping in a circular dance, clapping my hands and slapping my thighs, clicking my tongue and chanting low humming tones, slipping in and out of a hologram dissolving trance. With a forceful energy inexplicably electric within me, considering my five-day fast proceeding, only broken by rubbing Udai cactus gel on my gums and chewing on buka leaves. Tiyatanagao. I took flight in the camel thorn bonfire smoke, rising out of the cauldron of boiling neuro-neuro tea, drawn from root bulb of the Ferrari glutonosa flowering stems, and with a thick layer of ilan and kudu fat smeared on my forehead, forearms, and shins, I soared above the dunes of the Kalahari Desert, closed my eyes, mesmerized by the yellow devil thorn flowers, melting into a honeycomb-shaped geometric chevrons and vortices. After a dozen hours, the ravenous fire within my belly began to smolder into a dying ember, and my flight traversing realms of the dead and unborn, animal, alien, half-human, and all life forms in between, began descending before landing in a narrow tunnel within the Drakensberg Mountains, where my transformation into an herbal medicine man was complete. In that cradle of mankind, reborn, I came to be an interdimensional, shape-shifting shaman eternally. Guai gao ai ye tatsi usa tamaha. Painted rock face cave walls retell the origin story, paired with the transcendent ability to share and pass down intergenerational history using the vast vices of art. Those mountains echo the birth of consciousness, a cyclical fairy tale of suffering known as the human condition. End of poem. Okay, so Pam, if we could start with you, what'd you think?
First of all, wonderful read there, Richard. Yeah, I like this, right? It's powerful. It's one of those that I read over and over and get a new thought. But my original thoughts were that it spoke on the idea of the history of a land and the way dance and music connects all spirits. It's a very spiritual rite, and I really enjoyed and appreciated the rhythmic sense of movement in the poem. And, you know, I particularly like, I came to be an interdimensional shape-shifting shaman eternally. Painted rock face cave walls retell the origin story paired with the transcendent ability. You know, I like how it speaks on the idea that we need to know where we came from in order to move forward in a stronger spiritual sense. So excellent write and very well done.
Great insights, Pam. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, I was drawn to this section here. My closed eyes mesmerized by the yellow devil thorn flowers melting into honeycomb-shaped geometric chevrons and vortices. And from what I can gather, they're talking about the use of shamanic psychedelics similar to ayahuasca. And it was a dream within a dream indeed. I think it certainly has become more popular in recent years. And I've always been interested in the transformative power of these shamanic practices but I worry also that the consumerism by Western tourism operators seek to inhibit the innate spirituality important preparation to undertake such a journey. So it was a very illuminating ride.
Nice insights there, Neutron. Yeah, I too really love this piece. I think that Eric made us feel the healing light of his shaman as his incantations redeem us from this veil of tears. And no one writes like him. The surrealism, it's almost like an invocation. The poem is an incantation. Sublime truth, and very well done. Okay, I believe we have time for one more.
Yes, so I've got a poem by Emily Dickinson, and if Dexter, could you lead us in reading this one, please?
So I think Dexter dropped.
Oh, Dexter dropped. Pam, you're up next then.
All right. I will be happy to. All right. This is A Helpful Body Weight by Emily Dickinson, and it goes like this. Deft silence speaks so loudly, yet its quick quiet pricks my ear. At times my eyes see all too much, and ears do more than hear. Beware lest arms reach over boundaries placed there to protect. Those lips aren't mine to kiss, their smiles allure to secrets kept. A voice that pleads how much it cares is often misconstrued by both the sender and receiver. How could that be good? When someone has a need unmet, are mine the hands to give? Or ought I pray and point them elsewhere, show the way and live? The life I meant to share and trust with care but not to think, that I'm to be the rescuer, the savior from the brink. I'm glad my legs have learned to stand and wait for clearer signs. I'm learning how to be a friend within God's clear designs. End poem.
Great read there, Pam. And Neutron, if you could start us off.
Sure. I thought it was a thought-provoking piece in that it calls for patience. And as a friend or a lover, we want to sometimes fix people or situations, but in doing so, it almost creates a cycle of codependence, which is not healthy for either party. And Emily Dickinson, sometimes, actually, I'll start that again. The poet intimates sometimes pulling back and allowing a friend or love interest the time to process and proceed is the best solution. And I was drawn to this section here. I'm glad my legs have learned to stand and wait for clearer signs, a spiritual right on the importance of patience. Great job.
Mm-hmm. Great comment. Yeah, I love the way Daniel writes. And this was a well-reasoned call for patience in the face of another's struggle. It's extremely hard to do, but very empowering for the other person. And the stanza, I'm glad my legs have learned to stand and wait for clearer signs. I'm learning how to be a friend within God's clear designs. I resonated with this poem. I know what it's like to try and fix people and how futile that pursuit is. And I, too, have learned to just let the other person have their own healing, have their own process, and not step in the middle of it. Pam, your thoughts on this poem?
Yeah, this is an excellent write. Great rhyme and flow throughout. And I do like how it speaks on the idea. It's got a great spiritual undertone, philosophical intelligence. As you were saying, you know, it speaks on that idea of, you know, just stepping back and letting the person heal themselves. I like that it's also about that the most important part of communication is listening. You know, if all you're doing is talking and pushing, nothing gets learned. But if you step back and you really listen to a higher power, you really listen to the universe, or just observe what's going on, you're more likely to be able to help that person
if and when they ask of it from you. I really like this all the way through, and the idea of just taking that step back and observing. So excellent write and very well done.
Are you on mute, Richard?
I am. Thanks, Neutron. First things first, excellent comment there, Pam. And this is one of those times where it's kind of, we're in this weird little middle ground where we don't really have enough time to read another poem, but we've got a lot of time to wrap the show. And so I am going to do that. And we had a nice turnout for our show, both in terms of poetry as well as a very active board and a very active switchboard with lots of comments, commenters and readers. So it was a nice active show, and you called it, Neutron. You called in our novelist, and it was a success every which way you look at it. So good job there.
Thanks, Richard.
Absolutely, yeah. And I was in the same boat as you, Pam, where I had seen The Kite Runner. I had not been as familiar, and in looking over the quotes, it was just jaw-droppingly good and a rich vein for our poets to use as inspiration for their poetry, and they did so. So in terms of thanks, I want to thank the people that joined us on the group board. So that's Stelina. I know that what else was there before?
Mamuel.
Mamuel. And then even before that, we had Jenny.
Jenny.
So thanks to you guys. Yep. Yeah. And so thanks to you guys. It was a big help to have you guys cheering us on the board. And then live in studio, we had Laurent and Dexter. Many thanks to them. Pam, you're always a tremendous help with these shows, so we want to thank you. And then behind the scenes, Gene is making these shows happen. And so we want to extend our thanks to her. And then special thanks to you, Neutron, as my co-host. You always bring it, and especially in this instance, you brought our novelist and the inspired quote. So wanted to thank you for that as well. Final thanks goes to our poets. Without you guys, there is no show, and you guys do it every time. So much appreciated. Pam, I know you've got a show coming up in half an hour. So what's coming up?
Well, join us in 30 minutes, anyone who can, for Break On Through. We have poetry inspired by the artwork of Adam Olders. If you don't know his artwork, I highly recommend checking it out. And if nothing else, I do highly recommend, if you get a chance, checking out the entries in the contest, because we just got some wonderful responses, some great top shelf quality poetry, and I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Yeah, and then finally, we have tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern, open mic with Fill My Eyes. So please join us for that. Feel free to add a poem into the onto that board as well. Okay, we are out of time. Thanks, everyone, for a great show. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Have a good night.
Night.